Are you obsessed with Los Angeles? Head over heels in love with the City of Angels? Well, this is the podcast for you. At LifeHacks LA, we hack the best in arts, eats, and activities in Los Angeles. So join us and become an LA hacker. Baby, baby. Hey, what up, LA Hackers? It's your host, Stefan, and I'm super pumped for today's interview because we've hit a milestone with this episode. It is number 50, and I'm excited because...
We're nowhere, we ain't going nowhere.
That's right, that's right. This is episode number 50, and we're going to keep going. We're going to keep bringing the best of Los Angeles, and we are just getting started. All right, so to celebrate this milestone episode 50, we have a special guest on today. Her name is Allison Martino, and she owns a brand called Vintage Los Angeles. It's a super popular brand in LA. I think she's got about 400,000 Facebook followers. And what it is she takes vintage periods of Los Angeles, which mostly in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and she just has all these incredible pictures and stories to go along with it. And she posts them on her Facebook page and her website and writes articles about it, just the history of Los Angeles. It's called Vintage LA. It's incredible. I love it. I've been a big fan of it for a long time. So it's awesome that Allison Martino is on the episode today to share with us all the history behind Vintage LA. All right, guys, as always, stay tuned for the end of the episode where I'll be sharing my own special Vintage LA hack. All right, I'll see you on the other side. Enjoy. Hey, what's going on, LA Hackers? Welcome to another episode of the Life Hacks LA podcast. And today's guest is Allison Martino from Vintage Los Angeles. How are you today, Allison?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm doing really good. I'm really excited about this episode because I love Los Angeles history, and it's something that's kind of new to me as someone who moved here, not realizing how much history there is in LA.
There is quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it's not just Hollywood history, it's LA history.
Yeah, exactly. Like you, I mean, just these stories that are behind every neighborhood, really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but before we talk about Vintage Los Angeles, a brand that you started that talks about LA history, some of it Hollywood and some of it music and some of it just about the history of LA itself, like you mentioned, before we get into that, I wanted to know a little bit more about you. I know that you were born in Los Angeles, but can you tell us where you grew up and what that was like?
Well, I was born in Hollywood, and I was raised in Beverly Hills. And it was a very different city when I was born. Beverly Hills was more of like a village, a little more of a quainter town. It hadn't been infiltrated with a lot of big brands yet. And, you know, we still had like a J.J. Newberry and delis and fabric stores. And it felt like, you know, like almost like a neighborhood place. And it really wasn't until that show 90210 you know, kind of made our zip code famous. I didn't grow up like that. It was more of like a community, like Hollywood B or Westwood Village, and I really enjoyed my time growing up. My father was in the industry, in the entertainment industry, so I sort of grew up not just in Beverly Hills and LA area. My dad brought me on the road with him when he was performing as a singer. So I grew up in a lot of casinos and nightclubs and Atlantic City Boardwalk and Las Vegas. And so I was exposed to a lot of music.
Yeah. And so for those that don't know, your father's Al Martino, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's from the East Coast, right? So he moved out to Los Angeles before you were born for his career. Is that how it happened?
I hope he lived here before I was born. he moved from South Philadelphia, where he was born and raised. I moved out to Los Angeles many years later, in the late 60s, because he was on the Capitol Records label, and they, you know, I think back then they kind of wanted their clientele to be closer to the label. And that was the era of variety shows and a lot of them were filmed here in Hollywood. So he was a guest on the Mike Douglas show and then Joey Bishop show. So he actually moved out here, I think, to be closer to his industry. And then I was born in 70, a couple of years after he moved here. And I lived in the same house my whole life till 4 years ago. And wow. My mom sold it recently. And I still live now I live in West Hollywood, and I love it. You know, I've seen a lot of changes in L.A. since I've been born, and some not good, some okay, mostly not good. Mm-hmm. You know, the city was not as bustling as it is now. I mean, right now we're in this, but it just seemed a little bit easier. It didn't seem as crazy as it is now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can imagine with so many people moving here every year. It's interesting mm-hmm. what you were saying about Beverly Hills, because I've always known it as, you know, it has this amazing brand of being where the wealthy mm-hmm. live, even mm-hmm. though it's not even the wealthiest neighborhood in Los Angeles. But I wanted to ask you, since you've been here for a while, what neighborhood has changed the most? I mean, I know recently people look at downtown and they're like, oh my God, that's changed so much in the last 10 years. But from when you were growing up to now, what neighborhood would you say is like completely different?
Well, definitely downtown has had a resurgence. I mean, I think that Los Angeles might be the only city where the downtown wasn't a destination as much. Usually when you think of Chicago, New York, downtown always sounds like we're going out for the night. We're going downtown. But in LA, it's such a huge, huge, huge metropolis that I didn't really, growing up, I went to Santa Monica, I went to Westwood, I went to Hollywood. There was really not a lot of reason to go downtown. That was bankers and lawyers and more industrial. Now it's really come back with all the theaters that have been revived and the restaurants. Thank God it's completely revived. But when I was growing up, I mean, I can only speak on my experience. So I do think Beverly Hills has changed the most.
Really?
You know, when I was growing up, Edward G. Robinson lived across the street and Lucille Ball lived around the corner and Peter Falk lived around the corner and Fred Astaire, I would see him at the post office as a kid, and Jack Lemmon getting ice cream at Thrifty.
Wow.
It just felt, like I said, it was like a community, and Hollywood didn't seem so the way it is today. I don't know if Hollywood really is the way we see it today. It's more of a TMZ filter. But back then, you know, you would really see like Betty Davis at the Hamburger Hamlet, a local restaurant around the corner from us. And you could see people, and it was more of like, hello, how are you, and walk on. Or if you knew them, you'd say something, and oh, nice to see you again. But you don't see that caliber of celebrity anymore. And if you do, they're not going out the way they used to be, sort of just pull the car up and get out and walk in. Now everything feels extremely protected, and make sure that, you know, paparazzi is so out of control. I saw a lot of, you know, old school celebrities pass on, or they moved out of Beverly Hills, went somewhere else. Plus the architecture has changed so much in Beverly Hills. When I was growing up, it was these beautiful homes that were kind of set back on the lawn, and they had like a, you know, circular driveway or beautiful lawns. And now today they tear them down and they build these huge monstrosities that come like right to the, you know, right to the street. It just feels a little claustrophobic and different.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. So back then the celebrities were almost kind of part of the neighborhood and people didn't bother.
Yeah, them. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you would see Edward G. Robinson walking his six dogs, you know, on Rexford Drive, or, you know, you would see Jimmy Stewart, same thing, you know, getting his groceries at the food giant, you know. It didn't feel, oh my God, look over there. I mean, maybe you did, but it didn't feel like today with there's selfies and pictures and TMZ and, you know, this sort of like overstocking lifestyle.
Yeah, they probably don't want to go out because they don't want to be hounded, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the only, you know, like you think about Elvis in the 70s, he probably couldn't go out very much, but it's now where I feel like nobody really can go out. It's the pictures are just everywhere, and but it's not just the pictures, it's the community sense of a city you live in where you didn't feel, you just felt a little more like you knew your neighbors, and you know, you knew the guy's name at the markets, and you knew your shoe stores, and you know, it's just things have changed to a lot of conglomerates, and there's not a lot of mom and pop shops anymore, and places you really felt really wonderful supporting, and they knew you, and they knew your name, and that community is changed, and Rodeo Drive has turned everything into a massive tourist Disneyland sort of spectacle, and it doesn't feel homey.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great for tourism, but for the residents, probably not an enjoyable experience as much.
Well, Allison, you own a brand that kind of keeps that nostalgic vibe alive for Los Angeles, not just Beverly Hills. It's called Vintage Los Angeles. It's got hundreds of thousands of followers. I love it. I go on your Facebook page all the time to check out the historic pictures of LA. But can you tell us a little bit more about what it is and why you decided to start it?
Well, it's funny. I've done the Vintage LA page, Vintage Los Angeles page on Facebook is now going on 11 years old, I think. I started it by a friend telling me. I had a couple pages on Facebook, mid-century modern architecture, or I created a page about the Old Ambassador Hotel. And this is, you know, again, like 10 or 11 years ago. And a friend of mine suggested, his name Niall, said, you know, you should create a page like called Vintage LA where everything is encompassing and everything is there. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll start that. And sure, why not? I'm thinking, well, 150 people will join. Oh, well, you know, it's been a long time I've been curating it, but it's now about 370,000 or something.
Yeah.
And it's become so much more of not just what I post. I start the conversation, but I really enjoy, I think everybody enjoys seeing the threads and the comments that come from a post. And when you're lucky enough to reach that many people, more stories are generated. And I've learned more about the history of my hometown than I could ever have learned in a book or just going online and trying to learn everything I can. The personal stories that come out of it are golden. I mean, I feel like we're creating together this sort of online library of the history of LA.
Yeah, you have some
and
really
it's, just, it's never going to stop. I mean, we're just going to keep creating more stories.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, you were saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, you've got some incredible pictures up there and hundreds of them. And that's one of the things I was curious about is how do you curate those pictures? Do people generally reach out to you? Or, I mean, it seems like a full-time job to me when I look at some of these pictures and I'm like, how did you get these?
You know, they always say, if you love what you're doing, it's not a job. I don't get paid for this. This is something I enjoy doing. It's something I now feel committed to, and it's my duty to keep it going. I never expected it to grow to this level. But when you can document this much history, I'm going to keep it going as long as I can. The photographs come from a long time of me collecting pictures, and some of them come from the internet, you know, Google searches. Some of them come from libraries I have permission to post, and some of the pictures I've bought original slides or negatives and scanned them and put them up, and it's been very rewarding to see what the images, how people react to them, because it's emotional, most of it, and the emotional part of it has been the most rewarding, I think, for everyone, because it's not just an image and you hit a like and you move on. You look at the image and you read the threads.
Yeah, it's almost like looking through a family photo album, but for all of LA.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I was asking how you curate those pictures is because it's not like you update it once a day. I mean, if people want to go and look on the Facebook page, it's like 3 or 4 updates a day of different pictures, videos. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty adamant about posting. I do feel it's like it's never felt like a job. It never feels like dread. It never feels like, oh, I have to do this. I enjoy doing it, and I there's no rhyme or reason of what I'm going to post that day. Sometimes it, you know, unfortunately, we're losing so many people, all these legends and pop culture legends, and I do post about that. But I also post architecture. I don't post a lot of fashion, but if fashion has something to do with the era, then that would make sense, because it's vintage LA, which means it's a page told by the people who live it. And I keep it curated to a point where it really is about the people on the page that can help generate. For example, if I post an old structure of like Ben Frank's, which is, you know, fantastic old diner up on Sunset Strip, and it's now Mel's Diner. Yeah, you post a photo of that, and you say, "Oh, Mel's Diner is still going," and it's and they've actually repurposed an old building. And you know, within the thread, someone will say, "Oh, I met my husband there," or "My father built that building," and it's just amazing to just see what generates from a photograph.
Yeah, it is. I think it's the nostalgia, definitely. And it's funny that you brought up Mel's, because that was actually my next question. We have so many restaurants that have been in LA for, you know, 80 years, 70 years, close to 100 years. So I wanted to ask you, what are some of your favorite historical restaurants or bars that are still open today?
Well, there's, you know, I'm a little bit of a creature of habit, and I do like the older places. I'm not saying I won't patronize something new. Of course I will. But, you know, I love Dantana's. I love Musso and Frank. I love the Prince. I love, there's places, Shea J, Nate Now's, which just reopened again, Canner's. There's places that not only serve this beautiful purpose of being a historical monument of we've been going there since we were kids, but I have so many memories in these places with my parents or my friends. And you know the menu. You don't have to look at the menu. They give you the menu. Like, no, I know what I want. It becomes part of the community, you know, and again, being a creature of habit, I like walking into a restaurant and the maitre d' knows me and I know his name and I know the chefs and they know my name, and it's just taking the time to know who they are, and then they know you. And we're losing so many, you know. Casa Vega is one of my favorites in the Valley, El Coyote. I just hope and pray that they all can, you know, survive this thing we're going through. So I've always supported my local restaurants, you know. Yeah. When people say, "Oh, support your local restaurants," oh, I do, and I have. And you know, take the time to know who's seating you and who's serving you and who's behind the bar, and some of them are, you know, become my closest friends.
You know, like you said, we don't know what's going to come out of this whole situation, because for those listening, this is happening during the COVID. Restaurants are currently closed. Looks like they're slowly opening back up. We don't know what effect that's going to have. But I was just curious, what have you heard of the 1933 group, that group that refurbishes?
Of course, they're very good friends of mine.
Okay, great. I was going to ask your opinion on that, like how, you know, what they're doing. They're saving these classics.
They're saving Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I mean, all I can say is God bless them, because they come in and they save and they preserve and they actually renovate and they make it better than even it ever was or how it was then. You know what they did with the Formosa? Mm-hmm. That just, you know, happened last year. And we all know that the Formosa, one of the most beloved places in LA, you know, was going through some difficult, strange, bizarre times. But at the end of it, they came in, took it back, restored it, put it back as the most, one of the most, I think, one of the most elegant looking restaurants I've ever seen. But they know how to bring it back. You know, they're not changing it. They're enhancing its most perfect features, you know, and making it predominant again, and making it like, I always say, you know, movie sets try to create something that looks like the Formosa, but they have it, the real thing. You know, you can't even recreate that on a movie set. So yes, yes, and they're bringing back, their work is not done. You know, there's so much they're going to do, and they're going to bring back Tail the Pup, the hot dog stand that was on La Cienega. There's so much they've done, you know, the Highland Bowl. I could go on and on. Bobby Green is a good friend, and he has, him and his company together have made dreams happen, where you think you're going to lose something and you think it's on the chopping block, or you think it's never going to have a chance again, or it's just deteriorated. They come back and bring it back to its glory.
Yeah, they do some incredible, incredible work, 1933 Group. Okay, so I wanted to ask you about the world famous Sunset Strip. I think it's kind of lost a little bit of its allure that it had in the 70s and 80s, but, you know, back then it was kind of this magical place for music, the music scene and rock and roll. And I know you know a little bit about the Sunset Strip in that time. Do you have any interesting stories you can share from that time?
And, well, I would think some historians would say that it lost its luster in the 70s.
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm sure you've heard of clubs like Ciro's and the Macambo, and, mm-hmm. you know, in the 1940s, Sunset Strip was like Las Vegas.
Really?
I mean, there were clubs on the Strip that, you know, brought in the biggest bands at the time. You know, Desi Arnaz or Sammy Davis Jr. or Frank Sinatra. I mean, this is before Vegas. So Sunset Strip, to me, never lost its allure, because it's still an evolving strip. Today it's concerning only in the sense that hotels are taking over, and they're, how do I say it? They are destroying and demolishing landmarks. Let's put it this way. When Las Vegas really became what it was, I would say the old Hollywood glamour era of the 30s and 40s and 50s sort of died out when Vegas was created. When Johnny Rivers came in to the Whiskey A Go-Go in 1964, and rock and roll was taking a different turn, and this new generation was happening, and rock and roll was changing, the Whiskey A Go-Go became sort of one of the new clubs. But it wasn't really a glamorous club. It was a discotheque. Nobody had heard of a discotheque. And that was there was like a DJ with fringe dresses and playing records up in a go-go cage. That's another evolution of Sunset Strip. That's the 60s. The 80s turned into, you know, more of the hair metal bands, and that was another era. I believe the Strip was always alive, and it was always bustling in any era it was, until now, because I think now there's nowhere to go.
Yeah, that's why I was asking. Even in the 80s, some people came out of that time, and Sunset Strip was kind of known as a place to go see live music. And you really don't hear about it much anymore as being that, you know?
Well, I can't say that, because we had the House of Blues up on Sunset Strip till just a few years ago. And that was a pretty big club. Not part of the history of it is now. But at the time, it was pretty big venue. I do have to say that I'm very, very grateful to hear that the whiskey and the rainbow have been landmarked through the city of West Hollywood, so they cannot be torn down or changed. That will, thankfully, those structures are going to stay, and the people who own it, the Maglieris, are going to keep it going for, I think, forever. Their family owns it, and they will keep it going as a family. But other than those two places, I really find it hard. I think when Tower Records closed down a few years back, longer than I'm thinking, I don't even remember the year now, but it's been at least 10 years, I think, Tower Records closed. The music mecca of Sunset Strip between like Doheny and Holloway and that area there doesn't seem to have the magic it once had, where there was a lot of street traffic. And so there'd be a lot of, even if you didn't go into the clubs like Gazzari's, I mean, the Viper Room is still there. It felt like it was constantly moving, and whatever music you were into, you could still appreciate that music was still happening on the strip. Right now you have the Whiskey, you have the Roxy, you have the Rainbow, which is, you know, one of my favorite places in the world. But across the street, hopefully the Viper Room will survive. There's supposed to be a new development coming there, so I'm not sure if they're going to survive it. Everything's being sort of taken away, you know, for these new developments that want to come in and build these horrible glass structures and these boxes, and they're all hotels. And you go, okay, well who's going to come to Los Angeles and want to stay on Sunset Strip and walk anywhere anymore? There's nowhere to go.
Yeah, you'd have to drive or Uber somewhere.
But go where? You know, if you stay on Sunset Strip and you want to Uber somewhere, where are you going to go? Downtown? Yeah. Then you might as well stay downtown.
Yeah, that was kind of the charm of the Sunset Strip, is there was so much going on in that one strip, you could just walk out and have a full evening, you know?
Well, when you really look back at the strip, and if you really analyze it and really do your history on this, I mean, something like the Comedy Store, which is still going strong, that used to be Ciro's. Again, it's the north side of the street. It feels like the north side of the street of Sunset Boulevard has kept a little bit of its original structures. The other side seems to be depleting and just constant demolishing and constant new structures, and they don't have any charm. Charm is the word that we are talking about here. The charm is gone, and the way that the residents could, you know, walk up to the strip, and there's a little market, you know, in the south side of Sunset right there by the Whiskey A Go-Go, and I love that. I'm sorry, it's on the other side. Sunbee Market it used to be called. And, you know, they told me a couple of days ago they don't know if they're going to make it. And I said, oh, through the pandemic? And he goes, no, a developer, you know, wants to come in here and take the entire block down.
Jeez.
And then you see what these things look like, these monstrosities that look like, I mean, they're horrific. And they don't even look historic. They don't even look like something you'd want to see and visit or walk up to. They're too big, they're too ugly, and they have no character. And so I worry about the city of West Hollywood, which is where I live. I live right off the Sunset Strip, so I see it every day. And I do worry about the character being lost. It is being lost. What we will look at 20 years from now and look back and go, oh, I remember that, and I love that place so much. Well, what are you going to remember 20 years from now? These new structures are being built, and they have nothing to offer you. I could go on and on. Yeah. Your show's only an hour.
Okay, well, let's move on to something else. We know the feelings on the Sunset Strip. I feel the same way. I mean, it's not only that they're rebuilding stuff, but I will say one thing.
I've lived off the Sunset Strip since I've been born, mm-hmm. and I'm not going anywhere. So I will always live here. You know, I mean, I will always. They're not going to drive me out. you know, the people who want to come in here and develop and take away our landmarks, take away our favorite places, take away the mom and pop shops, all that, and little tiny shops are only like one story high, and now they're going up to 12, 15. I'm still going to stay here, and they're not going to drive me out. The history of this town is just as important as whatever they're trying to take away. We just have to remember that the past does create the past for the future, because the more we know about what was, the more we can understand what we're going to lose. So we have to be vocal about it. We have to be able to stand up and say to city council, and you have to be able to say, please don't do this. Please don't take this building down. Go to the city council meetings, voice your opinion. It's helped. I've done it. It's worked.
Yeah, they
I can't
saved
say
a lot
it works every time.
They've registered a lot of buildings as historic landmarks in Los Angeles and have been able to save them, to your point.
Yes, the more chatter, the more noise, the better. You know, I always think it's unfortunate when we complain online about something when it's already gone. But we can do it while it's in jeopardy.
Yeah, and they've done a great job saving a lot of buildings, especially in downtown. You know, marking them as landmarks so they can't be torn down.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so I wanted to talk to you about movies, because one of my favorite types of movies is where Los Angeles is a character, like Los Angeles is part of the movie. And mm-hmm. a great example of that is Tarantino's movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And yeah. I know you wrote an article about this recently. I loved your article on it. So I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about it, because you were talking about in the article just how good they were at recreating the detail. And, you know, as someone who knows in depth more than anybody what that detail is, explain it to us a little bit.
You know, just you saying the name Once Upon a Time in Hollywood immediately makes me smile. I can't think of a movie I've seen in so many years that has moved me like that. I will go on record that I have seen it in the theater 33 times.
Okay. Wow.
So I'm a little extreme. I loved seeing it, the New Beverly. 33 times, I think 17 times at the New Beverly. So let me, but it's how many times I've seen it doesn't matter. It's how many times I've seen it and noticed something different.
Really?
It's something that is astonishing to me. The detail, the way it does. Look, I was born in 70. I was not born in 69. I did not live in 69, but I have studied it enough and talked to enough people who lived that era here that said that was right on. You know, it's not so much about being right on. It's such a love letter, and I don't even like saying that because I've heard that so many times, but it's such a beautiful tribute to LA in that time. And, you know, as much as I've studied the history of LA, I must have, you know, 150 books on my shelf about Los Angeles. They always seem to skip the late 60s in these Hollywood books. It always starts at the birth of Hollywood, kind of ends around the early 60s, and then it moves right into the second golden age of film, which is the 70s. And you kind of lose that last few years of the late 60s.
Hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I love this movie too, is that he went to an era that I want to know more about, and I want to live in it more, and I want to feel it more. And I, you know, the music, it's not just the music and the music, yeah. you know, the clothes, the language, the way it's, the cars. LA was, you know, unfortunately, you know, a big damper with, obviously, a massive damper with the Manson murders. And I don't even like to say his name. So that horrible, unfortunate situation that sort of killed the end of the 60s for LA, I truly feel that Quentin Tarantino diminished his role in that. Because every time you watch anything on the Manson murders, it's always about Charlie and the victims.
Yeah.
And I feel that this movie finally turned that around. And it's about the victims. It's about them. And Charlie is diminished and his followers are diminished. And that's what exhilarated me about this film. It wasn't just the ending of being a fantastic revenge twist of fate as rewriting history, but through the film also, you sort of understand that this actor, Rick Dalton, was from a little bit of a different era and what he was up against with New Hollywood and how he couldn't quite understand why his phone wasn't ringing more, why he wasn't working more. And it's like this all the time in Hollywood. You know, you get a certain age, you can't survive more, or your star runs out and then somebody replaces you and you get killed off this show, or, you know. Yeah. There's a lot going on in that movie. And, you know, I originally thought when I was hearing about the film, and I'm a big Tarantino fan, and I did think that it was going to be a film that was going to twist it, you know, let's see what he's going to do. But I didn't think it was going to be as beautiful as it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's
a beautiful movie, you know,
Yeah, it's clear that he loves Los Angeles. That's no secret to anyone. But then when you watch that movie, you're like, okay, this guy really loves L.A. and the history of L.A.
Yeah. You know, I've just sort of studied the film so much, but the scene when Brad gets off of the freeway to sort of go back to his trailer is such a great moment about Hollywood, because here he is working with Rick Dalton, who's got a, you know, big fancy house in Hollywood, and he probably worked his whole life for it, and maybe he feels his star is, you know, decreasing and all that, but he still has his house. And Brad goes home off the freeway, and he lives in, like, Panama City. You know, like, doesn't really live in Hollywood, or doesn't live in L.A., but he's got to take a drive a little bit to go home. And then when he gets off the freeway, and of course you see the Van de Kamp sign and that beautiful spinning blue windmill. But when he gets off and he pulls into the drive-in and then goes into his trailer, you realize, wow, here's a guy who probably gave it as many years to the industry as Rick Dalton did. But he's really nothing to show for it.
Yeah, it kind of shows both sides, not just the glamorous side, but... Brad Pitt's character, like you said, he worked the same amount of years, gave all the blood and sweat, and this is what Hollywood had for him, you know? It's interesting you put it that way.
Well, that's sort of, you know, the movie, when I first saw it, it was so much to take in that I had to see it four or five or six more times, because there was so many storylines going on, and I really wanted to concentrate on just many of their storylines. And then it all kind of, to me, it would have been a very hard movie to edit, because there really is this beautiful thing that happens at the end and we know what happens. But so much of it is beauty until then.
Yeah.
You know, and all I can say to people is if you're watching it just for the ending, you're missing out. The ending is...
The first time I watched it, I spent most of the movie just focusing on the LA backdrop stuff. And the second time, I focused.
Well, I was there. You know, I stood on Hollywood Boulevard when all that was recreated, and I can't just say it was recreated. It was recreated to exactly where those original places were. So if you're standing on Hollywood Boulevard, and I went over there to write a story about it for Curbed LA, and I was standing on the street, and I see Peaches Records. You probably don't know what that was, but that was an old record store on Hollywood Boulevard at the time. It was a little later than 69, but who cares? This is Tarantino's world, so I'm embracing it. And It was in the exact address.
Wow.
And that's the kind of thing that I said to some of my friends, we're never going to see anything like this in our lifetime. We're never going to stand on the on Hollywood Boulevard and have a block and a half or how many blocks it took to have this recreated for this movie ever again. Really happy it didn't happen during the pandemic. I'm happy you got it done 2 years ago, because the time and the effort and the art that went into putting back those stores. And by the way, Quentin Tarantino, if you're listening to this, please give us more of it, because I know how much was filmed. And when I saw it initially, I wanted to see more of the storefronts.
Yeah.
When I saw it as many times as I have, it's an actual perfect film to me. It doesn't need any change. But we'd love to see some extras of the Hollywood Boulevard and Westwood. You know, I mean, he didn't only bring back Hollywood Boulevard, he brought back Westwood Village, this corner where the Bruin and the Fox were, and he brought back the Hamburger Hamlet, and just the newspapers, you know, on the street, the flyers in the window. The detail was astonishing.
I'm wondering where he got all that information. I'm surprised he didn't reach out to you, Vintage Los Angeles. You have this treasure trove.
I'm not going to get into it too much, but I did hear from them.
Okay, I was going to say, because that amount of detail, he must have done some serious research.
I think his team, his production team, and I know, I don't have to say I think, mm-hmm. Were extremely meticulous, and they did reach out. And I'm all good with everything that happened. And they were good on their own. I mean, I'm sure I've provided a lot of information out there that was already out there. I think my Vintage LA has been such an interesting crusade for me, whatever it is I always want information out there about my city. I've never really wanted to be paid for it or have accolade for it or anything. I've always just wanted the information. Now it's turned into sort of a phenomenon. But I do think that once in a while I'll see something in a movie or I'll see something, I'm like, oh, I think I put that up a few years ago. I'm so happy they included it. Yeah. I'm not saying I did anything for that film, but I think what it is just this champion for, I feel like I'm a champion for LA history. And I think a lot of people follow the page and I'm grateful for it. And I'm glad that I can just make sure that LA has more to its history than just Hollywood Boulevard. I'm not trying to put down Hollywood Boulevard, but Hollywood and LA and its Los Angeles residents have just as much to offer and explain about what they've been through, where they have seen, what they can offer, photographs, things out of their scrapbooks. I've been amazed by the last 10 years what people have sent me and what I've learned. I get pretty passionate about it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because you have this huge following, almost 400,000 followers on Facebook. People love it. You have a blog. Do you have any other future plans right now, like maybe creating a documentary, grabbing those that footage from Quentin Tarantino and making a documentary or a book or something like that?
Hi, Quentin. Hello. Okay, no. No, I report on Spectrum News, which is Channel 1 on Spectrum Cable, and I have a show on Wednesday nights that I'm an on-air contributor to, and I talk about LA and the history of it and where to go and what to learn, and so I've been doing that for about a year and a half. It's on hold right now because of, you know, this. But I have plans. I just can't quite say quite yet. Yeah. But I am, you know, I'm writing a book and I am putting together, I have a very elaborate collection of LA memorabilia and slides and LA history photographs, things that haven't been published. And I'm constantly trying to figure out how to release all that.
Yeah,
I will figure it out.
Yeah, I think that'd be amazing because obviously the interest is there, people like me who love to hear about the history. And then also, I think you have unique perspective because most of the books that I read about Los Angeles history are a little dry, you know? It's like you said,
yeah.
they're just going through the early history, which is interesting. But I think you bring a unique perspective just with your photographs and the history you have there, you know?
Well, thank you. And you know, I've never been a touter of, I don't know a lot about the history of LA at the time it happened. Okay. So I'm not, my knowledge of LA really does sort of start in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I never want to say I know more than that, but I do know a lot about those decades. When I go back into the 30s and the 40s and the 20s, and there are so many other pages that are so much smarter than me. And they know so much more. And I learned from them too. And I think that all these pages on Facebook, whatever you're into, if it's LA in the 50s, the 70s, the 20s, there's something that it can offer. You know, there's a forum for it or there's a community for it. And it's one of the greatest things about the internet and Facebook and is that you can have a forum for this and a community for it. But I really, really have through the last, especially the last 6 years on Facebook is really to just, I really bring to the Facebook page what I know of. And I try not to bring something I don't know of.
Yeah, makes sense.
And if I do, then I'll let the community explain it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good that you stick within a like 20, 30-year period. Yeah, that
well, you know, I was born through the 70s. I mean, I was raised here in the 70s, the 80s. Wow, believe it or not, the 90s is becoming vintage. Doesn't seem possible. But, you know, people ask me all the time, what is vintage and what qualifies as vintage? Why are the 90s vintage? Why are the 80s vintage? Vintage should be like the 30s. That's a valid point. But I always thought that after the turn of the century and after 9/11 hit and after we went into the 2000s, that's where it started to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I did live in the 90s without a cell phone. You know, and I seemed to get by okay, and I didn't have a computer. We had one communal computer at work, you know, we all kind of took turns with it. But I when I post photographs of just people walking down the street from before the 2000s and people are looking down, it always seems like the first question or the first comment is, well, it looks like they're looking at a cell phone. It looks like they're looking at their iPhone.
No, they're actually.
But maybe they were like, they pulled a compact out of her purse and she was like looking at her eyelashes to make sure they're okay. It feels like we're so conditioned now to go like, we're used to looking down, you know, when we cross the street or when we're walking the street, across the street, down the street. I mean, I still look at people. I still smile. I can't now. I've got a mask on, but I will maybe put my hand up high and, you know, you look at pictures that I maybe will post from the 40s, 60s, even the 80s. And if there's like a picture of people are crossing the street and they're looking down, we think they're looking at an iPhone.
Yeah.
You know? So that's where I say vintage LA goes to 1999.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about that way, but there is kind of a level of disconnect that happened when cell phones came. And so, things just seemed a little bit more innocent back then. I mean, you could go to the airport and pick someone up. You could go right to the gate.
Thank
and pick
you.
Them up. But, okay. Well, it was great talking about LA history. I've got another question for you that's a little It's not really LA history. It's more of a personal question for you. And as someone who grew up in Los Angeles, spent most of your life in Los Angeles, can you describe for us what you would consider to be your dream day in LA, from getting up to going to bed? What would happen in between, in like your perfect LA day?
Oh, boy. I would say that I would love to wake up in the morning, and I would love to walk down Rodeo Drive where it didn't look like it did today.
Go back in time, right?
I'm not trying to put down these Gucci's and these, you know, these labels and all that, but I really want to go back to a simpler time where the labels weren't so predominant. I don't remember growing up like that. I don't remember where, you know, that affluence was just, I don't know. I don't really get it. I miss Hamburger Hamlet. I miss the restaurant Scandia. I miss a structure called the Pan Pacific Auditorium that I used to go to, where, I don't know if you remember the movie Xanadu, it was sort of prevalent in that. It's a hard question because there's so much. Are you asking what I would want to do if I had my dream, like even if I wasn't alive yet?
Well, I didn't expect you to pull out a time machine and go back in time, but I guess I should have expected that with vintage Los Angeles. But what I really meant was, like, you have the day off. You want to spend your dream day in LA today. Like, where could you take us through that? Like what restaurant would you go to for breakfast? Where would you go to exercise or go to a movie?
It's such
or whatever.
A good question, because, like, I really have these memories of the early farmers market. Mm-hmm. And I like the Grove. Don't get me wrong. I really do like the Grove, but I liked it better when the farmers market had the little retail stores across the way. And that was torn down, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. And I really miss that. Like, I miss going to the mom and pop shops. I miss going to a place where I could just buy some moccasins, you know, or buy some turquoise jewelry at some stand that was just on the side. And it had nothing to do with, you know, a store. It was just like a little stand. And I miss record stores. You know, I miss bookstores that were more mom and pop. Yeah. You know, I miss Westwood Village when it felt like a village, and that's the kind of thing. I mean, I could write a thesis for you about what I miss about old LA. Yeah. But those are the things that come to my mind, and I can honestly say a lot of that's gone now. Mm-hmm. And we must preserve what we have left, because it's not going to be here for a while. And I don't want us to come out of this pandemic where we walk out there finally and everything that was still existing is now gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And like a lot
so
of
I worry about that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're definitely
What do you think you would like to see in LA if you could go back?
If I could go back in time? Let's see. I'd like to see Beverly Hills, because I've only seen Beverly Hills as kind of what it is today. You know, I think the first time I went there was maybe 20 years ago, and it wasn't that much mm-hmm. different than what I see today.
No, definitely not much different from 20 years ago, but boy, 30 and 40 and 50.
Yeah.
there are just these little communities. Westwood Village used to be the most bustling little town. You know, it was so crazy that you couldn't even drive your car in there. They actually would not allow you to drive your car into the village. There was that many people.
Wow.
That's hard to explain to people that haven't lived here forever. I'm not saying they can't understand it, but you look at a lot of these stores and they're empty, and they're not, it's just dead. It's like a ghost town.
Yeah.
And I'd like to go back to an LA that was a little less people, a little more mom and pop shop, and the architecture was still standing. I miss the old Century City Mall. We have a new one now, and I don't like it at all. I've been vocal about it. But yeah, I mean, again, I could go on and on. But I just want to end this by saying, you know, this is my hometown, and I'm not leaving it. just because this stuff happens, I'm going to fight for it. I have many friends in my community that do fight for it better than I do. And I'm standing right there with them. And we just can't, you know, really afford to lose much more history and culture, because it's what we were, you know, this is what the city was built on. And I don't want people to come to Hollywood or LA and have nowhere to go and see, you know? Yeah. So,
well, we appreciate that you're fighting the good fight for that. Los Angeles history is important. I wanted to ask you, where's the best place for people to go if they want to learn more about Vintage Los Angeles and what you're doing over there?
My page?
The Facebook page.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a virtual thing. That's like that's an internet experience. But in LA, I really do thinking you walk down Broadway today and you look at those theaters. All those theaters are original. Some of them have been restored. Some of the neon is still up. I think the neon in this town has been restored beautifully. Some of it hasn't. Some of it has. There are so many nooks and crannies of this town. You just have to look for it. It's not a specific place anymore or a time anymore. I mean, you can go to the farmer's market and you can walk around and experience the produce sections and the little mom and pop shops that sell out of there. I think that's probably the most historic part of my immediate area. There's the Apple Pan. You know, Nate Now's just opened again. Canner's is fantastic. You know, look, I could give you a list of places that you can still go. Dantana's just, is serving food again. Moose on Frank is probably the number one, 100 years in business.
Yeah, yeah, it's more bits and pieces of Los Angeles instead of entire areas.
It's bits and pieces, exactly. Yeah. And you look at what Hollywood Boulevard has turned into. It's hardly recognizable. I mean, the Chinese theater, which I always call it, has been called so many other things. But right there is Mousson Frank, right there, right next to it, just a block up. And it's still thriving, and they survived. And it's because of us that go and patronize it and love it. I don't think they're going anywhere. But yeah. Also, you know, it helps if your establishment is landmarked, and if the people who own it really want to protect it, protecting is important. You know, my friend John Wolf, who owns Carney's Hot Dogs up on Sunset Strip, been going since the '70s. Fantastic place. A little, you know, it's a train. It's a real train.
Yeah.
No, and nice. I think that LA has lost a lot of its whimsical sort of elements, and everything is turning into these big glass boxes, and it's like a friend of mine quoted it and said, you know, LA is having like an architectural nervous breakdown, and everything is just becoming so, everything looks the same.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're out there fighting for the history of LA. And if anyone wants to find out more about Vintage Los Angeles, they can go to facebook.com/Vintage Los Angeles. Allison, I really want to thank you for coming on. It was really great talking to you and learning more about the history of LA.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we'll talk again soon. Bye.
Okay.
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Stefan again. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Allison Martino from Vintage Los Angeles, as she shared with us some of the incredible history of LA. And if you're into it as much as I am, you definitely want to check her out, Vintage Los Angeles. I'd say the best place to go is Facebook, and you just go to Facebook and type in Vintage Los Angeles, and you'll find hundreds of pictures and little stories and anecdotes about some of the historical artifacts that we have in LA. All right, let me get to my Vintage Los Angeles hack, and I've got two quick ones. The first one is I want to talk about one of my favorite restaurants, just steeped in history. It's 110 years old. It's been around since 1908, and it's Philippe's. And they're basically their claim to fame is they're the inventor of the French dip sandwich, which is actually in contention by another local LA restaurant who claims they invented the French dip sandwich. But anyway, long story. long story short, they have amazing French dip sandwiches at Philippe's, and you cannot beat the atmosphere. It's a one-of-a-kind place. You walk in there, and there's wood chips all over the floor, and they still do things the same way as far as ordering food that they did, you know, 50, 60, 70, 100 years ago. It's incredible, and I can't even do it justice by explaining it, so I won't even try, but I highly recommend you go check it out. Go get an affordable meal at one of the most historic restaurants in Los Angeles. It's right by Chinatown and across from Union Station. All right, my second hack is, you heard Allison and I talk about the incredible 1933 group who goes and refurbishes historic LA bars and restaurants. And so just to make things easy for you to get more information about them, just go to lifehacksla.com/1933, and it will redirect you to a page on their website that gives you all their bars and restaurants that they've redone, and you can check that out. All right, that's all I have for you this week. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for sticking around for 50 episodes. We got 50 more coming, and we're just getting started. All right, I'll talk to you next week. Later.